Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
March 2025, like honestly the first quarter of 2025 is almost done, and it almost feels like it hasn't even begun yet. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hey everybody,
and before we start the show, we need to thank our sponsors at Audience Key and at Wix Studio. In fact, we're going to be having Tom from Audience Key on sometime in the next few weeks. They have a new feature that they want to talk about. And again, the guys at Wix Studio have been just tremendous supporters. So thank you both so much. Also, I remind people, March 27th is coming up, and our March 27th, which is only 2 weeks from now, is the SEO charity event. SEO for Pause mini conference. Martin Split is going to be talking about unpacking JavaScript, which is actually really, really, really cool. It's a free conference, doesn't cost a cent to register for, but by the time you're done, you're going to want to donate a whole bunch of money to the SEO for Pause campaign. And out of all the chaos, we're going to talk about some weird news. And we're going to talk about some difficult things in the next hour, and some really interesting stuff in the next hour too. But of all the stuff, Christine, that's happened this week, there may be a chance for a not just a ceasefire in Ukraine, but a meaningful ceasefire, one that actually works for Ukraine, Ukrainian people, and hopefully for the millions of personal and real disasters that are happening just because of the nature of war.
Well, for those in our industry or who are listening who don't know, a lot of the tech we use in the SEO industry are created by people in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So Ahrefs, Duda, Anton Shulk is part of, you're still part of Duda, right?
He is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's quite a few tools, and so we are always concerned about Ukrainian issues. Hopefully there is, but within 12 hours of the discussion of the 30 days of peace, Putin bombed Zelensky's hometown. So not a lot of hope. I do hope for our Ukrainian friends that this is over.
This is the closest that both parties have come to being at the table where, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, it was so heavily favored on the Russian side. Now it looks like momentum is swinging towards appreciating the Ukrainian side, at an area Ukraine side. And at any rate, March 27th, SEO for Pause. Check out the conference, give her the money, and help this cause out.
And I will be speaking too, so I'm excited. And Alan Blywise, who almost never speaks anymore, and has a wealth of information, will be talking about technical auditing.
Absolutely. So, it'll be a most interesting afternoon.
Definitely.
Okay, so this definitely falls under the Beware the Ides of March heading. We woke up this morning to a core update.
It's March. It has spring in Google. I've been telling people online.
You know what? It's been a while. It's been 2 months since we've seen one?
Yeah, usually though, December, they quiet down. January and February, they're getting geared back up, and they run one in March. So at least this time, it is not a 60-day rollout. It is a
Take up to 2 weeks to complete. Yes,
but not 60 days, which really messed me up last year because I don't get paid until I turn the audits over that I was doing, which when I had to go 60 days. without payment. Yeah, that was fun.
Just to be very thorough, Google threw everything up in the air. We're gonna
Yes.
have to wait. Yeah, indeed, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Okay, so Google is saying this is a regular update designed to better surface relevant, satisfying content for searchers from all
Yeah.
types of sites. We, they being Google, also continue our being Google's work to surface more content from creators through a series of improvements throughout this year. Some have already happened. Additional ones will come later.
So although Google always tells you there's nothing you can do to improve, that's a complete lie, because I recover sites from core updates, and it's almost always technical, and I treat it as though it's the big cleanup algorithm for Google. They're like, hey, you have these technical issues, you've had them a really long time, and we're tired of crawling your site, so we're just gonna knock you down a bit, 80 to 90%. But as long as you know what to fix, I've had no core updates I didn't recover a site from. As
Yeah,
long as they did what I told them to do. They don't always do what I'm telling them to do, but
indeed.
that's
And so,
helpful.
like, core updates are actually really interesting.
Yeah, and it's
They
pretty
indicate
easy.
what Google they tend to indicate what Google wants to do with itself moving
Yeah.
forward. So anyway, this is happening a couple of weeks from now, around March 27th, when there's a conference about SEO for pets, by the way. Will they should start stop rolling it out a few days after that. We'll start figuring it out based on, behavior in the SERPs. And Bob's your uncle. Experts will start writing about it 3 days later.
No, 3 days, 3 hours.
That's
Can
right.
I tell you
Absolutely.
one quick story for this week? I know, just real short, because I know we have a lot today and not a lot of time. I had someone come to me this week and or 2 weeks ago and asked me to review their site for a devaluation from a Google update. And I went and looked. I was like, it doesn't match up to any of the updates. And then I looked at it, and they didn't have a devaluation. They got picked up in a news story on a very popular trending story for 2 months. And they got Discover traffic. So they got like 300,000 visits from Discover. And you and I both know Discover can do that, but Discover is never like the same all the time and not
It's not consistent.
ever consistent, ever. You might get 100,000 and then not hear from them again, ever. So I wrote them and told them that I outlined it, showed it to them in images and stuff, how they didn't have a devaluation. And they were mad because they wanted to know what they had to fix. And I'm like, well, nothing, because you don't have a devaluation.
Well,
So
could this
always
be a
get things.
case though, where you're at though, where you're at? Could this be a case where in Google's advice is right. Create more great content, we'll find it, and you'll get the discovery thing again. But they can't say it will happen, but it
Right. It's
might.
so hard. Yeah. And even in news sites, it's really hard. But I just want to tell people, make sure if you drop like right now in the next 2 weeks, that you get someone who has experience in updates to help you fix it. So you know what's wrong and you can get, because you can recover, and Google's going to tell you don't necessarily can do anything to recover. No, that's not true. Every core update where the client listened to me since they came out have all been recovered 100%, as long as we knew what to fix, because it's all the core ranking signals, so it could be anything in that set. Yeah.
So, anything else on this one?
No, but
Cool.
we can't skip the WordPress backup plugin vulnerability.
Well, no, especially like seriously, this is okay. So, this is a WordPress backup plugin vulnerability affecting like 5 million plus websites because it's the all-in-one web WordPress migration and backup plugin from the all-in-one, which is the maker of like a gajillion different SEO plugins. So, anyone who's using the all-in-one SEO tool set is probably also using.
Yes,
So,
but they fixed it. You just have to update, and it was based on I can't speak today. Unauthenticated attackers being able to inject a PHP object into the code set, but the good news is it's not really easy to exploit, so you're probably pretty safe. It's not one of those ones where you put it out there and anyone can attack your site. But you definitely want to make sure you update it as soon as you hear this, if you haven't already heard this.
yeah, go there. If you're running all-in-one, update your plugins. You know what? If you're listening to this and you're not running all-in-one, go update your plugins anyway.
Yes, always update your plugins.
Okay. This is also one of those Ides of March things. I don't know if you've noticed your 401k plan, even obsessively, like going to Google or
401k?
Yahoo or whatever. Yeah, four.
What
You mean
401k? That's so
my
nice.
200.5er? Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you go look at Google Trends and type in the word recession or the word tariff, you'll see a serious spike in Google user interest in these words. It's actually it's not a hockey stick. It's more of a vertical skyscraper.
Yeah.
And it's an indication of how worried Americans are about just the increasing level of absurdity in the economy and in the actions of the people responsible for guiding it.
Well, and your countries, other countries are worried too. So it's a global thing we're creating here. There was a famous economist on CNBC yesterday, and I don't remember his name, unfortunately, but he came out and said, "I'm going to lose my job for this. I don't care," and just railed against it. So, for those who don't know, the way a tariff basically works is when we add it to a country, when the goods come into the United States, they add that percentage onto the good. So, let's say it was a $10 bottle of wine, and it's a 20% tariff. Now it's $12 they have to pay when the good comes into the country. But the
Yeah, by the
person
way, the
paying,
difference going to the coffers of the government.
yes, good point. And so the importer who gets it has to pay that money. It's not the part country who
To the
sent it.
government. They got to pay the money to the
Yeah,
government. But
yes.
they imported a good and they had to pay out on it. So what are they going to do?
They're gonna right. They're gonna when they sell it, they're not gonna eat the cost. They're going to have the consumers pay the cost. And they might have them pay a little bit more, to cover other things around that importing at the extra cost. So your $10 bottle of wine may now be $12 or $13 based on that. And then there's also always people that get greedy and they just add a lot more to it because they think they can. But so today, the president of this country, my country, U.S., said he's going to add a 200% tariff to wines and champagnes and liquors that come in from, I believe it was Europe, it could be France. And that would mean that $10 bottle of wine would now be $20, with a $10 amount having to go to the US government from the importer. So when they get it to the people who sell it, they're going to have to pay that $20 plus whatever extra the importer's tacked on. So by the time you get it, that $10 bottle of wine is probably going to be about $30. That's what a tariff is. So there's a lot of times on our current administration will tell people it's not a tax. It decreases taxes. That has nothing to do with it. It's actually called a tax just because it stimulates a tax. It's not technically a tax. It is money our government has said you have to pay. Now, they do this sometimes for good reasons. Chinese EVs are very good, but they were able to sell them at $6,000 a piece. So if they came into our market at $6,000 a piece, they would destroy every other competitor in the market. So we added a tariff to those to get them up more in line with the cost that United States manufacturers have to do, use to make them. So let's just say it was $15,000. But they get them up about equal so they're competitive in the market and they don't destroy the market. That's a good use of a tariff. Unfortunately, these are just kind of random and who knows, and they change day to day. So the market can't tell what they can do. Even if they knew it was going to be negative, but it was going to be consistent, they could predict and move forward. But they can't do any of that right now. So our stock market is also crashing. So these are
So,
just basic economics. This isn't political. This isn't ideological. This is just how it works.
why does this matter on a tech show? Well, for a couple of reasons.
Yes.
One, stuff is made of stuff. So, computers are made of things. Chipsets are made of things. Those things have to come from somewhere. Their raw materials got to come from somewhere. If the raw materials have a new tariff imposed on them, which is essentially a tax on the consumer, those things will cost more.
Yes.
So, to make this computer, I've had to spend more money. I'm going to have to charge more money. Secondly, all of the companies that we work with are affected by the greater economy. Small businesses to the great large corporations. When we see major cutbacks happen, a manufacturing recession, perhaps, we lose jobs in our sector.
Yes.
Why is this important? Well, normally it's the strum and flow of politics. And honest to goodness, Christine and I are both highly political outside of our tech worlds. But for the most part, when it comes to tech, we don't care. We care about the tech. But in this case, it's having such a like ripples on, like when you throw stones into water, you see the ripples just ripple out. You have no idea what those waves are going to affect off in the peripheries. We're seeing waves off in the peripheries, and that's why it matters on a tech show.
It's not even just waves. I did see it in a Slack yesterday that several people, they've lost clients based on possibility of recession and having to pay more for their goods. So, because some people stored up ahead of time, aluminum and steel, people who need that. But unfortunately, if you're selling perishables, you can't stock up on that ahead of time. So you are now paying whatever extra cost. And it's very confusing right now because they did a blanket tariff. Now it's based on the new NAFTA agreement. I forget what it's called.
Like Kuzma.
Thank you, CUSMA. And so if it's in a CUSMA, it's not tariff. But if it's outside of CUSMA, it is tariff. And that gets very complicated. Like if I have a car which has like a million moving parts, then that car now, which part's tariff? Also, another thing is one of the reasons we get cars cheaper here is you move it across the Mexico and Canadian borders, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, as they make it or make the parts. And right now they are not being tariffed because the auto industry went to the president and said, please do not tariff us. And he said, I'll give you 30-day reprieve. But also the reason we're supposedly doing this, there's a supposed reason. And that is, it was if we can endure 3 to 4 years of this, then that will move manufacturing back to the United States because we'll have to make everything here so there are no tariffs. The thing is that we don't have the capacity to do that anymore. We don't have those plants to do it anymore. So even in
Can
three to
you
four
imagine the
years,
cost? Like, suddenly your hammer goes from being a $5 hammer to a $30 hammer because you got to pay for the building the hammer was made in.
exactly. And then in addition to that, the old tech, like automobiles, doesn't need to come back to the United States. The new tech, like under the CHIPS Act, we're putting in manufacturing plants so we make chips for the new economy. That's very good for workers because that's a very long-term business. We don't need the manufacturing for the cars to come back. We've already kind of worked that out. Most of it's in the United States, but sometimes it goes back and forth across borders.
Oh no, you know what, that going back and forth across borders, you know how that actually saves you all money?
Is it cheaper there?
No. Well, labor costs, sure, but storage. We have what's called a just-in-time supply management system in the auto trade. You don't need to store, you don't need to have vast amounts of space to store stuff in as the production line moves along. You do a little bit of work, move it to the next place, do a little bit of work, move. What's basically happened is the assembly line is no longer in one building.
That
The
makes sense.
entire continent is the assembly line.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
And it saves insane amounts of money doing it this way.
So now we probably bored all our listeners to sleep on Economy 101, Economics 101.
It's
It
important
isn't
to know. You know what? We
important.
got one more quick history lesson, and this is a fun one.
Okay.
This is how one person. Well, not just one person, but one person spearheaded the charge here. One person literally saved our industry 15 years ago today, at the time of this was recorded.
They
Her
did,
name
I
it was
remember.
Rhea
Yeah.
Drysdale. And 15 years ago this week, Rhea Drysdale sued through the patent office to stop rogue SEO Jason Gambert from registering the term SEO with the U.S. Patent Office. Okay, so Rhea spent about 17,000 of her own money, which I think she got back like 14,000 through the SEO community. But other people in the fight included Sarah Bird. She was at the time the legal counsel to SEO Moz. She noticed the patent application first, and she turned on Jonathan Hochman, who turned on Barry Schwartz, who turned on me. Who mentioned it on one of the early Webcology podcasts? And this is back when this was a live to air and then recorded. We were destination radio at the very beginning with Webmaster Radio. So people in the SEO community tuned in. Rhea was a regular listener, heard that this guy Jason was like literally trying to trademark SEO. And she went and filed an appeal to it and stopped it. And she's a hero for it.
Yes, she is.
So
It's a
I
very
feel
big
really
deal
good
at the
about
time, I remember.
our part in it, because you know what? This is a case where the media helped win.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh.
Okay. Elon Musk is losing money hand over fist. He lost over 100 billion amidst Tesla's worst weeks ever. And this is gonna redeem the world's richest man wants that $56 billion back. I remember an appellate court overruled the Tesla shareholders who actually voted to give Musk $56 billion as a pay. And then it got, anyway, it got blocked by another judge. Now Musk is trying to appeal that so he can get his money back and the world's richest man. You know, it's really weird. Why are people on Facebook outing themselves by bragging about their Tesla purchases? Like, what's the matter with you guys? I don't understand that. I'm seeing it all over the place. You see marketing people, oh, I bought a Tesla and I'm really offended by people who think I'm Nazi adjacent. I don't understand that at all.
No, I don't understand it either. Also, right now, did you hear the funny trend that they're turning their Teslas into like Civics and stuff by changing the.
This is an Oldsmobile, I swear. It's not your daddy's Tesla anyway.
Exactly. So, anyway,
Okay,
did
so
you
here's
would
some
you,
good.
I'm sorry, did we
Let's see.
talk about the $56 billion payday?
Well, we tried talked about him trying to get it back again. Yeah,
I just think it's just
maybe he will, maybe he
hilarious.
won't. I hope he doesn't. But
But it's just hilarious, right? Because he just, the company lost half its value because of, specifically because of him. And yesterday he asked for them to pay that $56 billion payday that he thinks he was promised, but apparently most of the courts have not thought he was promised or he doesn't deserve. So I just think it's kind of funny. I'm like, I just tanked your company, but hey, pay me $56 billion.
I honestly don't care about boycotting Tesla. I'd rather bankrupt it. Moving right along, Google is dropping the page annotations feature.
Yes,
It's
which is, yeah, that was terrible. Do you want to explain to people what it was? Do you remember?
yeah, so Google
Yeah.
would like display your page, but it would insert a link in your content or links into your content. You didn't add those links. Google added those links, directing, really making them in charge, like giving them authority over your content. And it was, I don't know, I can't even explain why they did it, but now they've shut it down.
Yes, thank goodness. It was such a weird thing. It was
I
like
mean,
the link to
it
your own
moved your just.
content, your own content, and then move you out to Google. Like, it was very weird.
What they were trying to do is like, okay, so if you click on this, we'll give you the search results of what this means. But it took users out of your page and back to Google search. It's like you got the click and now they're taking it away from you again.
Exactly. That's okay.
Why would they
It was
do that? I
terrible.
never understood. Why do they do that? But they don't anymore. They stopped doing it, so that's a good thing.
Yes, it was a terrible product. I don't probably didn't get but use much either.
So, speaking of a company that's sort of like acting antitrust, these things happen for a reason, Google, and there must be at least 50 more ways to break up Google, but the US Department of Justice has filed a proposal outlining four ways to break Google's monopoly. The filing proposes four ways to loosen Google's monopolistic hold on search and advertising. Christine, you want the honors?
In the
Well,
proposal, yes, I'm sorry. The first question, I'm like, where are they?
first way they've
Yeah.
suggested is to require Google to separate Chrome from its business. That would mean like, selling it or spinning it off to an independent company. So, right now, Google gets so much data out of Chrome. or not. And there's a great debate on what they do with that data, in fact. Is it fair that the biggest search engine also has the most dominant browser? I don't know. Speaking of ways that you just antitrust Google, the U.S. Department of Justice antitrust filing proposes four ways to break up Google's monopoly. You remember the antitrust cases, the one that ruled that Google ha absolutely has a monopolistic hold on search and advertising? Well, here's the U.S. Justice's four proposals. First one, requiring Chrome to separate Google from its business, which means selling it or spinning it off to an independent company.
And then there's limiting Google's payments to companies like Apple. Apple's already asked the court not to do this because they need that money. Not really need it, but they want it.
Well, and
Stop.
furthermore, reducing its ability to secure ex exclusive deals like that. This is
Yes.
when Google comes and says, we're the search engine by default.
Yeah. And they go, no, and you can't do it with anybody else either, nor can you go back to Apple and make that deal later.
Well, here's
Well,
the
it's
funny thing. Apple can say you're the search engine by default. You just can't give them 20 billion, 20, was it $20 billion a year to
billion,
do that?
billion, yeah. Stopping Google from favoring its own products over competitors in search results. We do know they do this. This is the one I think would be the most fair. Increasing transparency in Google's advertising and data practices so competitors have fair access to key information. But part of what they're talking about is it exposing the algorithms. And I
Yeah, that's
don't.
never going to happen.
No, plus I don't think a company should be forced to expose their algorithms. I mean, yeah, Google's played a lot of dirty pool, but so have a lot of others, and I think it should be a fair one. So they are talking about making them the most likely one right now is separating Chrome, but yeah, it would be just horrible because then they don't, what do they control, like, to serve of the product? I mean, they don't control the SERPs anymore in Chrome, so that means that. What? Like,
Well, it
how
means
can it?
Google loses a whole bunch of free data. There's a debate on what
Yes.
they do with that data, but
Yes.
we know that they get it and that somehow they use it to improve their services.
And just the basic things in Chrome that you use every day. Like, I use Firefox for a lot of my items, but I have a lot of extensions I use for what work we do that's only available in Chrome. And then also the layouts of the SERP wouldn't be able to control it the way they do. And like Google, could they still do Google Translate? I don't know, maybe, but like there's all sorts of services you get through the browser that making them.
Google could survive without Chrome, but it would have to be a very compliant Chrome in the post-Google phase, wouldn't it? Like it'd have to
Yeah.
be very cooperative with Google.
Very, very. And then that would just require them to pay somebody like 20
Well,
billion a year to
maybe they
control
could
the
take the
search
Apple
results.
money and give it to Chrome.
Exactly. And they probably already think of that. I
Christ.
think for me, I don't know about what you think. I think the stop favoring its own products and search results would be far more fair and level a playing field. Separating Chrome really doesn't level the playing field to me, but making them not favor their own products so all products have a competitive advantage and win based on the facts of the algorithms, I
Isn't
think
that
that's fair.
kind of what the suit was about in the first place?
Yeah, but now, like I said, the most likely one they're talking about, what I see, in the trades, I guess you could say, the publications that talk about this stuff, is that they want to separate Chrome. But it just seems like the least it would damage Google, but it's not even that, like, who else has browsers, right?
Remembering many of the people coming up with these remedies don't actually understand how the machine works. So this is the
That's
most
true.
obvious solution.
That's true, but I don't think it would level the playing field. I do think the not favoring their own products would. So,
So, OpenAI has called on the US government to let it freely use copyright material for AI training. That's hard. That's it. That they've been doing it anyway. So what? So they want the US government to say they can do it without getting sued?
yeah, basically that they're free to do it. There are copyright suits that are starting to get settled. I don't know the current status of it. I haven't looked it up in a few weeks. That's how fast it changes. So I won't speak to definitely what's happening there, but they are starting to make determinations. And it could be OpenAI does sees the determinations may not go their way to just freely take all the data and people's works, you know. So they want the government to provide private sector relief, which also means that states can make special laws about AI and fair use of copyrighted data.
Here's what really is really bugging me about this story specifically. I mean, well, you have to add it to a couple other stories, but AI is becoming part of the function of government, and not like, you know, to make things faster at the DMV, but actually the function of government itself. You know, analyzing like intelligence, for instance, and to continue growing and being intelligent, you know, trying to replicate human intelligence, AI has to continue learning, especially about new things. It can't, it's like a shark. It can't stop learning stuff. It must always absorb new stuff. Or it starts, you know, recreating basically on a set of information that's not being replenished with new facts. So if AI is able to just take any information whatsoever and hoover it up and use that to, we didn't see these problems coming 3 years ago, 4 years
No.
ago, and we really absolutely should have. I can't believe we didn't.
They say it should be that they needed to compete with China, but
well,
you
this is
know,
the thing, AI should not be a national security issue like it is now,
there's
but it
a,
is.
yeah, although, yeah, no, but
I mean, of course it
yeah,
is. How couldn't
because,
it be?
well, because it doesn't really work well. The large language models, not the AI. AI is great, no problems with that. But anyway, so this is in MacRumors. It's the article is OpenAI calls for on U.S. government to let it freely use copyrighted material for AI training. There is a letter from OpenAI in here you can link to and see it and what they wrote. The funny thing is it's OpenAI writing the letter. Like they kind of close it with this whole, you know, proposal that it's all about a free and democratic, make more people productive, more prosperous, and more free is literally how they end it. So coming from OpenAI, it's a little bit of a stretch, but that is what they're doing. It's also in combination with our another story we have today, and that is OpenAI is calling for DeepSeek to be banned.
Well, because it's state controlled, but
yeah,
state controlled by the PRC,
yes,
as opposed to Grok, which is going to control the state.
Yes, and I do think it's an issue. I do know people who have like VC groups in China understand how that government works. So I do think it's an issue. But it's just funny that, you know, OpenAI is causing for the full ban of for DeepSeek. So we'll see what happens. It's a new government, supposedly super friendly to these guys. So I guess we'll see if they remove the regulations.
Given that Sam Altman, OpenAI, Mark Zuckerberg, the technoligarchs, for want of a better phrase. Actually, I think it's a damn good phrase. The technoligarchs,
like
given that they are trying to recreate the US government under the Russian model or an authoritative model, which could very much resemble the PRC a few years from now, I think this is awfully rich coming from them.
yeah, there's a lot
Awfully
of
rich,
hypocrisy here.
if you know what I mean.
Yeah, go read the letter and we'll see how this all shakes out. So I'm sure we'll know in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, so a couple of stories earlier when we're talking about like AI having open access to anything regardless of copyright, just ignore copyright laws. The problem with all of this, and Sam Altman has almost proved this himself by creating a new open AI model trained for creative writing, is there's a quality that comes from the intent of the author. Or the authors, the creators. There's a reason the authors or creators went a different direction, thought a certain thought. There's a lot of emotion, experience, empathy, and, well, knowledge that goes into real storytelling. And so
yeah.
OpenAI has written this model for creative writing, and apparently the writing is good, but people who read it feel like there's something missing.
I think it technically, if you ran it through like, you know, Word grammar checker, it would be fine. But according to the author, this is on Digital Trends, Willow Roberts, the author was stating that it's not that great, and it's just talking like rambling kind of thing. And to get a feel for the writing style, this is a quote: just read the first paragraph or two, just read the first paragraph or two. It's incredibly abstract, very wordy, and full of random AI-themed metaphors. It's basically written in a way that will please no one. Most people call it pretentious, and the people who actually like this writing style probably won't accept an AI-generated version of it. If it definitely doesn't please me, there's no point to the story. There's no intent behind it. It doesn't really matter what it is, but there has to be one, an intent to
Indeed.
entertain us, teach us, persuade us, debate us, and this is what is important. Take this human interaction out of the equation, and we're just left with empty words that happen to be in an acceptable order. I just
And
love
when you're reading it, it
that
is. That's great.
description. That's
And
such a
that's well
great
written. You know why
thing.
that one of the reasons that's well written? Because that was well written by a person describing
Yes.
her experience and why she had this.
Exactly. So, yeah, I guess it just for apparently she wasn't the only one. She was also showing some tweets and things. Other people felt similar. So, don't rush out there and use it to write your journal or your best seller. Also, we do know for the marketing industry that things convert at a much lower rate if they're written by AI instead of a human.
The day that somebody does use AI to write a great novel and that novel wins a great literary award is the day that, all of us have to leave the keyboard. Honest to goodness. So this may be from the, well, they would say that file, but, and it's actually statistically completely true. According to the Columbia School of Journalism, AI search engines are confidently wrong way too often.
Yes.
So,
I did say we know they're confident because they're trained that way. They're trained to be the confident guy in the bar. I know what I'm talking about, even if you don't. So that's why they appear confident. But yes, they tested ChatGPT, Perplexity, Perplexity Pro, DeepSeek, Copilot, Grok 2, Grok 3, and Gemini. And by the way, you know which one was the worst? I'll take a guess.
I'm gonna go with Grok.
No, Gemini. Although Grok was pretty low too. So
Okay, because
yeah. It's not
collectively
a
they
graph.
provided incorrect answers to more than 60% of the queries put in front of them. Across different platforms, the level of inaccuracy varied, with Perplexity answering 37% of the queries incorrectly, while Grok 3 had a much higher error rate, answering 94% of queries incorrectly.
Oh, wait, this is funny. So the reason it
So
came in
Gemini does
wrong,
worse?
yeah, but you know what I just saw in the next set of graphs? I forgot that these are related. They fall forward the links in the AI overviews. So most of the AI overview links didn't work.
Went to
Probably
404
because
fours.
they're making them up. That's why. So
Ah.
they're wrong. But we know that AI, large language models, make up citations, make up text, make up. So, and I guess apparently the Gemini made up a lot of links.
Hold it. Because the only reason you want to get mentioned in
Yes.
Gemini through AI Overview is so somebody will click on that link. And
Yes.
are you kidding me?
No. And by the way, this is the
Oh my
Columbia
God.
Journalism Review, and the Search Engine Roundtable has an overview of the study. Study AI search engines are confidently wrong too often, but they have a link to the study. And the study has these great graphs where you can see specifically where they're wrong, how they're wrong. Like some of the things that they checked were article was an article corrector or not? Was the link there or not? Was it a 404 error page? Was it a publisher's homepage, original article, syndicated article, or an official copy?
You
So
know what else
apparently,
Barry's?
what's that?
Do we know what else Barry's article had in it? It had this one line that SEOs need to pay attention to. Many of the search engines and chatbots seem to bypass robot exclusion protocol preferences.
Oh yes, we've done stories on this. People are almost getting DDoSed by these crawlers, and DDoS means you're given so many requests so frequently to the page on your site that it can take the page down from being accessible for a while.
Well, it's not
So,
just that. There are legitimate areas I don't want crawlers going into of my clients' websites.
no, and the
I
problem is, yeah.
there's a reason I use robots text quite liberally.
The problem is they don't pay attention to it, and also even when you use their specific like "don't crawl here," like they have at a tags you can put in the site. But so they're bad bots. But the other thing too is, in Google, they say, well, sure, you can get rid of this. The problem is then you don't appear in search. So it's not an actual solution. But anyway, so yeah, so some people should really read this study. I love this study. It speaks to my heart after for 2.5 years telling people how often they're wrong. I didn't think they were this bad though. This is 60%. That's pretty insane. But come over and read this article. Go to the journalism, Columbia Journalism Review, and see it there because it's fascinating. And if you're using it to create text, be careful. And I hear this all the time, Jim. It drives me crazy. People are like, I searched it on ChatGPT, and I'm like, oh no. Do you know if
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
correct? And they're like, what? And like, they don't. Lots wrong on there. So use a search engine for what it's used for. A search engine is where you search things. And a large language model is like just to write things, but not necessarily accurate.
So this is a seriously shifting gears. This
Oh,
is a fun
again.
one. Matt Mullewig is still wigging out.
Is he still? Oh, I like that wigging out. That's a new
Yeah.
term for this. For those who don't
Mullewig.
know, let's give her background real quick because some people
Okay,
didn't
so
tune in
Matt
today.
Mullewig went mad.
Yes, Matt Mullenweg controls WordPress. WordPress, the paid version, like the nonprofit, the for profit, and then something called Automattic, starting about this time last year, right? He's
No, it was a little bit later. I mean, it was closer to summer last year, was it
okay,
not?
maybe so, maybe in June or July,
Actually, you know what?
but
He's been going wonky for a little bit now, but
yeah. So briefly, he kind of went a little lot haywire, threatened people with removing WordPress completely, then tried to do it to WP Engine, got sued, WP Engine won. Now he doesn't mess with them, but he messes with everybody else. Banned a whole lot of people that have contributed to the core development of WordPress for many, many years from the Slack, so they can't contribute anymore, and on and on and on. And now we are at what point, Jim?
well, now we're at a point where the courts have backed Matt off of his attempt to, well, basically become the WordPress emperor. But he's made a bunch of enemies, and now on a leaked Slack chat, Mullewig is considering limiting future WordPress releases to just one per year from now through 2027, claiming it's the only way to get
Yeah, the only way to get them Automattic, the paid company that contributes to WordPress core, also Matt's, is to pressure WP Engine to drop their lawsuit. I forget which lawsuit this is, but I know they won the one that Matt sued them.
because Matt
Oh,
basically cut WP Engine out of the
yeah.
WordPress environment, killing basically destroying their business. They sued.
Yes.
You can't do that.
And that's why WP Engine right now is I tell my friends, is the one safe host because you know that he said publicly. He's not going to do anything because he doesn't want to go to court again.
So this is basically him blackmailing the rest of the system.
Exactly. And once a year, what's the number one problem people always have with WordPress? Like if you could suggest it to a client, I wonder if you get the same response I do.
The biggest problem people have with WordPress,
Yeah.
getting hacked.
Security.
You need to
Yeah.
uppress. You need to update everything all the time.
Yeah, security, right? So you're not going to update WordPress but once a year and it controls 50% of the internet? Like, yeah, that's a to me, that's a lawsuit
That's
waiting to
very
happen.
dangerous.
Very dangerous. Yeah, I think it's a lawsuit waiting to happen. And we also know that Yoast had talked about creating a fork and a new WordPress. So we'll see what happens there. I haven't seen anything updated on that. But yeah, Matt's wigging out again. I like it. Wigging out.
Okay, so privacy, thy name is Bob, and Bob, we know everything there is to know about you. Meta wants its advertisers to connect to Google Analytics. There's
Yeah,
been a firewall, a big wall between Meta and Google because Meta has so much directly connectable information on individuals. This is going to be disaster.
and this is done by the individual owner of the analytics account. This isn't like Google says or not. They've made it available to connect with Google Analytics in the Meta ad account. Well, soon it's not available. It'll be available very soon. Yeah, I don't think I need, I don't know. I mean,
This is a prophecy. I can't think of the number. I can't. I've thought of a bunch of ways this is going to destroy any sense of privacy for individuals in these ecosystems. The ad target is going to be way better, though.
Probably. kind of
So,
just kind of crazy.
you'll see a better class of shoes, or at least shoes that fit you. But like, it comes at a huge cost.
It does. It does, but I don't know. It's funny, these companies keep getting addressed for their privacy issues or their antitrust issues, and then they just make more of them, but they know it'll take a while for the law to catch up.
Well, indeed, it's the bull in the china shop sort of thing. You can be a bull in china shop and just go and destroy all the china, and by the time it comes to collect and stuff, the china's already broken. You can't put it back together again.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Twitter, Twixter, X went down this week. I think it was like what, 18
Wednesday?
hour outage or so?
Yeah, I think it was 18 hours, and I think it was Wednesday. By the time I got online, it was back up. I think it happened overnight.
And it
So.
mightn't have been like a complete outage. It might have been like sporadic ups and downs too. I'm not entirely clear on the story, but you know who else isn't entirely clear on the story? The owner of Twixter itself, Elon
Yeah.
Musk, because he's out there claiming that Ukraine did it. I think he
Exactly. And
knows Ukraine didn't do it.
no, we know he knows Ukraine didn't do it. It was just trying to get people to be angry at Ukraine. Actually, Anonymous claimed to do it. The Anonymous account is active again. By the way, for those who don't know, Anonymous could be anybody because anybody can claim to be Anonymous. It's fine with them. But there is a core central group of Anonymous hackers. So sometimes Anonymous claims to have done something, they have really done it. So I wrote a story about it years ago. So
What
anyway,
did happen in this case was they left their back door open.
yeah, they left it. Oh, what you mean you can't fire all the people in your company and have no issues? Yeah, they had a backdoor issue and also a DDoS attack, which is just they overloaded the server, which is hard to do nowadays because most things are in the cloud. So you just jumps onto it and adds another server to the load, right? But in this case, yeah, they were able to take it down for a while. So, but it was not Ukraine. It definitely was not Ukrainian. And the, yeah, people claim responsibility for it. So.
Okay, so this might surprise some people, but it actually doesn't. It's not shouldn't be surprising. The number seems high to me.
It does.
A SparkToro report, as Rand Fishkin at SparkToro says that Google Search has seen a 21.64% growth in searches in year over year. Now, I don't know. Google may be seeing a lot more searches. How it's addressing those searches is another question. Is it giving good results for those searches? That also is another question. What has Bing seen in the way of search growth? Moreover, what has ChatGPT seen in the way of search growth? We know that Google's seen 21.6%, though. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and we also know that, as you just said, that the AI summarization engines, that's what they are not gaining any great share. And we know that from some other stories we've done. They gain a little bit, but very little.
Google has the, mean, just the amount of search share Google has over everybody else is staggering.
14 billion searches a day on Google. ChatGPT had 37.5, so that means Google has 373 times more searches than ChatGPT. And when they put
Now,
the bar chart together, even Bing, poor Bing, is
yeah,
like,
in number two, it's dwarfed. The dwarfed is too small a word.
it's like 14 billion at Google and 613.5 million at Bing, which is a
This is
respectable
searches per
number of
day.
searches, per day. This is a respectable number of searches per day, but quite different than your 14 billion, so.
Indeed. So Google may be losing teeny percent of its market share, but it's still seeing by far, like so far and away, the vast
Well,
majority of searches per day. It's there's no word for how many more it sees.
there is one thing to that, though, and that we know from the DOJ documents is if you make search worse and people search more, they often click on ads because they're tired of searching. And we know they had ad growth too. And this is the theory of the CEO of Google, and he stated it in a DOJ testimony under oath that they're making it worse so they could get more searches. His main metric he reports a lot of times in their earning calls is search, like queries, number of queries. So this could all be just a function of people actually not liking Google search, because we know Google has a lower sentiment now, or a positive, lower positive sentiment, and it has lost usage. So what looks good may not be actually that good. So we'll see.
So Google is using AIO, AI overview responses more frequently. How accurate the AI overview is may be another question. How Google understands you and describes you may be questionable. And you know what? You mightn't have a clue about how you appear in Google AI overview. Well, in a sponsored article at the Search Engine Journal, Bright Edge outlined four prompts to put into generative response search engines to sort of get a gauge on what they know about your products. Now,
by the way, it wasn't Bright Edge, it was Bright Data.
Oh, sorry, Bright Data. Sorry,
yeah,
Bright
I
Data.
Made that mistake at first here. So.
Thank you for catching that. Now, yeah. Before going into this, all of the warnings we've ever said about AI and about trying to predict what AI is doing beforehand. But these are actually some good common sense tips on prompts you can put into Google search to, again, get a sense on what they think of you. For instance, ask a question, what is your brand known for? And see what the response is. Create a listicle about the top performers in your industry. See if you're on it. Ask about your competitors, and then ask about your competitor compared to your brand name, or your company name, or your product or service. See what they say. And there has to be a number four in here somewhere. They said four. I'm reading through the articles that are going along. I'm sorry, there's just not a four here. More importantly, do this on Gemini, in Google Search, in ChatGPT, and any other fine AI recommendation engine near you. Check yourself out. Ask questions. Ask about yourself, about your brand, and see what descriptors come up. And then start clicking links, especially in Gemini. What do you think about that?
I think a lot of it's a misunderstanding of how all this works, but some of it's,
well,
it could work.
What would you do if you started asking questions and you found that they had it totally wrong about you? What are you going to do about that?
Create some mini sites, feed the URLs into the large language model so they ingest that material.
So,
and block us from Google.
Where does this have to go to logically?
All you have to do is let them crawl you, inject the URL, because otherwise they don't necessarily ever see you. They're not storing your information, they're training. But if I created several mini sites, blocked that from Google, and just called them to me by injecting the link into their large language model, then it would crawl me and it would more likely, use that.
Start to
predictive
nudge
text.
These stories towards the way you want them constructed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a predictive text model, so it's, it's
so
not as
where does
it
this have
now.
To lead? Enormous amounts of web pollution. That's where it has to go there.
Oh, it's all about pollution, right? So,
well, no, I mean, some of it actually sells products. Believe me, I'm trying to hawk products here. Honest to goodness, I am.
I don't know. I had two people this week ask me about a generative AI large language model optimization plan, and I'm like, that's not a thing. It's just not a,
You know, I got a great plan. I actually, as a content writer, I really do have a great plan for generative AI influencing, and Christine just outlined it a few moments ago.
Yeah, that's
but
yeah.
Here's
and
the
I,
problem. It leads to tremendous amounts of web pollution.
Yes, and also the best way into generative AI on any of the platforms is to know which search engine they're using to call the documents that it summarizes, because they're summarization engines. And if you know it's like Bing or Google or Perplexity has their own model, then you make sure it does really well in those models. And then that's how you get picked up most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time for the overviews. So.
So there you go. Push, push, push with prompts. Figure out what they know about you. And then, try to influence the outcome later. Let us know how it
Exactly.
works out, please. We'll read, or
Exactly.
we'll just read about it.
Exactly.
Okay. You
So
want
this
this one?
one, no, you can start with it, but it is, I think it's an important one. I don't know that it's
Well, it's certainly
helped
important.
a
Like, so
lot, but
publishers are going to Google and saying, you're taking our clicks,
at
and
our
even when
content.
you provide links to our websites, as the Columbia School of Journalism points out, sometimes those links are wrong or just made up. So Google's VP Product Research, Robbie Stein, responds to those concerns, saying, "This is your part." Like, seriously,
Saying
what's
what? I missed that part. I didn't know you were
well,
throwing to me. I apologize. What
that's okay.
were you throwing to me?
Mike Futura, a Google publisher, asked Robbie Stein, how do you quell legitimate concerns from web publishers who are scraping all their content, removing
Yes.
incentive for users to click over to their sites?
And we know that's
So,
Twitter's
Robbie
own
Stein
study.
responds.
Responds with
Saying the team is focused on.
the team is really focused on how we make it easy to click to sites. We have to have a lot more UI updates coming that we showed in our announcement post. It's something we hear from users that they want, and core to how we're building AI mode. Also, AI mode is going to respond to new types of questions that people ask, follow-up questions to explore different facets and ultimately create new opportunities for sites to rank. And though you don't rank in the AI reviews, they decide to choose you as part of the document call, and then you might be shown there. And we know from the stuff we just read from Columbia Journalism that most of the links in there are not real, or at least the four pages. So, but yeah, this is the I agree. I'm glad that they're starting to address this, because I know that publishers are really frustrated with the fact that they trained on their information and their clicks have gone down, and there are studies that show that that is true. So hopefully they'll continue to do it. They are talking about putting little images in with some of this and adding more like a regular search result. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, Jim's like, yeah.
I mean, honestly, what do you say to this? We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what happens. That's there's I really wish Google would do what Bing was doing and let us toggle back and forth. Here's the 10 blue links. Here's a summary of what we found in those 10 blue links. That just makes so much sense. I can even get
Exactly.
behind that. You're summarizing what you decided was the best of the contents. Okay, cool enough, but let me see both so I can choose. That would be a we'll see what happens next that I would really like. I feel like an old man yelling at the just yelling into the cloud.
Yeah, no, you're not. It's a real
But I
problem.
am actually
It's
literally am, but I also feel like I'm right.
You're right. It's a real problem for the publishers, to lose, to have their content used, and then to lose clicks because of it, because they're, answering from their content, the training on their content, they're answering the questions. So.
Okay, so to move along, let's say Google whacks your site with a site reputation abuse policy manual action. They don't like what you do with each other. You're a spammer, okay? Google thinks you're a spammer. And so you take your content, you just go to another domain, thinking, well, okay, this gets good, take it over here. Google doesn't know that I'm spamming over here, right? Well, Google just expanded the site reputation abuse policy manual actions next steps section, which says now move the violating content to a new domain. If you link from the old site to the new site, use a nofollow attribute in those links. Avoid redirecting URLs from the old site to the new site, as redirecting may introduce the site reputation abuse policy again. It's really nice of Google to tell you how to circumvent this, eh?
Yeah, Although there's an oddity that's not in this article, so I apologize, you might not have seen it. But so they added use no index to exclude the violating content from search indexing. Make sure your no index rule is effective. Don't block content with the robot's text file, right? But if they already accessed your content and crawled it, if it's the no index on it, it may not drop for a while. So they tell you to use the robot's text for a little while, but then move to the no index. It's kind of odd. So it's all kind of, my mom used to say, fakakta. But basically, on this kind of abuse violation, it's large sites with like coupon sections or things they're just doing to rank that they don't even own. And so it's not the whole site. So you have to decide, is it really worth it? Trying to save it. Like if your users can find it internally, definitely do these things. But Google isn't going to allow you to like take it and move it somewhere else and then redirect your links and then get the content back. Once you've been killed by this, you're pretty dead with this tactic. So you have to either change how you're doing it or you have to just make it invisible to Google and just hope that your users can find it internally.
I would just like to see a lot of this stuff disappear from the web because this is where so much of the disinformation and actual outright separate dumb people from their money content exists.
It's true. And the thing is that it also harms smaller publishers who really spend the time in cultivating, their kind of coupon and deals. But I work with a client that is a coupons and deals site. There are real coupons and deals site. They've been around for 20 years. As soon as they started implementing this rollout on the big sites like Forbes and stuff, their traffic went up like 20, 30% because now they were getting those spaces back again, right? And they weren't having to compete with the strength of like a Forbes or something who really shouldn't be selling cannabis gummies. I guess they could, but doesn't seem to fit their brand. So that's the thing. So I do think it's a good thing. It just it's usually only going to target the content that you shouldn't have been ranking for anyway.
Here's a good one. I love. I'm really happy about this. Google has published a new robots text explainer, outlining how robots text, helps publishers and SEOs can actually control search engine crawlers and bots, the ones that actually obey robots text.
Yes.
It's a must read for all SEOs. And you know what? Even if you're an advanced SEO, go read it again anyway. This is one of those things you want to refresh yourself on over and over and over again.
Yeah, there's one that's really odd though. So it says you can ha leave your robot text file empty. That was always fine. Or not have one at all if your whole site may be crawled. And you can add rules to manage crawling. When in the past, if you didn't have a robot's text file, they didn't crawl you, right?
Yeah, indeed. I'm actually kind
Well,
of like scrounging my eyes at that. You need a robot text file, do you not?
unless I'm remembering it was something else, but I do remember that they would not crawl if you had no RT. You could have an empty RT, but you had to have some file on there that told them how they were allowed to crawl your site or they would not crawl it. So I just thought
Maybe
that
they don't
was
need that
interesting.
anymore.
Yeah, maybe they just don't. Yeah, possible. Well, you know what? Their AI crawling probably doesn't respect it anyways. So maybe that's why. Anyway, it's a good thing. Everyone should know how to use their RT properly.
So here's a neat one. This is Google on low effort content that looks good, but is it good or not?
Looks good, but isn't good. Low effort content, LEC, like
Yeah.
John Mueller called it. Low effort work that results in content that looks good. And I guess I just tell me if you see, because I had a little trouble following the logic here, but basically, it's just like the page looks really good, the design's really cool, but the content still is just low quality content. It doesn't really matter if the page looks good. Is that correct?
Yeah, they will still try to go after it.
Okay, I just want to make sure I didn't misread because I was like, maybe I'm not
Now,
understanding.
which is good. You know what? If Google's trying to eliminate content from its index that passes bad information or is just low quality, there could be the same information being provided in far better ways or greater detail or whatever Google's considering quality in the context of this information sphere. Probably, cheap AI generated web pollution content, of which we were speaking a few minutes ago. But you know what really bugs me?
What's that?
Google publishes AI overviews it knows to be wrong sometimes.
Yes.
Well, it doesn't know them to be wrong, but
It
it
knows they're
knows
wrong.
that some of them are wrong.
That's a good quantity of them,
And
sure.
that's okay in the world of certitude. That's okay. But you know, if they find it on low quality content on a really good looking page, they're gonna burn it.
Yeah, well,
Okay,
you know,
weird,
it's Google always don't do what I do, just do what I say.
Yeah,
So,
indeed. Okay, some stats for you. AI overview is trending towards more authoritative sites and
and
moving
certain
away
types of
from,
queries.
sorry.
Sorry, certain types of queries as well.
This is bright edge data, by the way. This one confirmed absolutely bright edge. And I'm confirming it by saying it's bright edge. I can see both words. Just hey, you know what? Just making sure we got to get this one right.
Yeah, and this is in combination with them sending it more to YouTube as well. It's this right edge did two studies, kind of, yeah, so they're kind of
Okay,
mixed together.
so they found that instructional content, especially with how-to queries, instructional content, visual demonstrations, verification and examples, current events, these are getting advanced overviews that cite YouTube videos.
Yeah, it's interesting how many are going from to videos. But you know what? I also see that as a, it's different than sending people to a text website that may be wrong or, you know, maybe bad or maybe who knows what, or maybe not there because it's 404 link. Yeah, they're doing it with YouTube with instructional content, visual demonstrations, verification, current events, authoritative sites basically in industries like healthcare, B2B tech, finance, travel, insurance, education. Not so much if you're like not one of those kind of authoritative industries. So they're not sending it as much if you're, you know, like, what's a good example, Jim?
Well, I think a good example is education and the education and the industries around education. And when we say education, we're not talking about like the Oxford website or the Harvard website or the U of T website. We're talking about all the companies that will provide you materials for education. Sometimes these materials are suspect content. That's the kind of stuff that we're talking about. But or that predominates in the space called education. So when they say that Google thinks that the education category is less authoritative, it's not that the universities or the institutes are not authoritative. It's just so much bullshit around these institutions, or that make business off of students going trying to get into these institutions.
And yet, that being said, the ones that benefit the most from video are visual
Healthcare.
demonstrations, step-by-step tutorials, product
Yeah.
comparisons, and real-world examples. Instructional getting 35%
Well, yeah,
referrals,
but
and
these are
visual
things like,
demos getting 32%.
but that actually makes sense when you're thinking like we're looking at things like healthcare. So how do you take a measurement? How do you take a pulse? How do you screen for different types of cancers? A visual demonstration could be quite useful there. E-commerce, how is this product used?
Yeah, how does it work? How does it
Or
function?
how cool do you look using it? I mean, YouTube provides you a wonderful series of, I don't know, commercial opportunities, really.
Well, Barry, Barry Schwartz unboxing is like a big thing, so it really is.
Well, I mean, seriously,
What
does
loves
he
to do and
ever
what people love to watch.
stop? God,
And
goodness gracious, that guy.
never sleeps.
And he
So
keeps every box too, by the way. He has a
I
big
know,
table full of
I've seen the
boxes.
photo. Barry Schwartz is one of the authors we pull from regularly. If you don't know who he is, so.
Barry Schwartz is a legend, is what Barry
Yes.
is.
Yes.
Okay, so this is in Search Engine Journal. Check out the article. There's again tons and tons of stats gathered by Bright Edge on where AI overviews tends to be trending and showing more responses. Okay. We have still like a trillion stories to get through.
No, we don't, because some of them are fast stories, and I will go through
That
them
is
quickly,
true.
and then you can just respond. But the ads are also that are coming up are fast stories.
Okay, so there's data suggesting that Google's indexing rates are improving. And sometimes by improving, we might be talking about getting types of content out of the index as well as types of content into the index. Because again, there's some stuff that really shouldn't be in there. Not just from a page quality standpoint. You really don't want the entrance to your shopping cart, for instance, coming up in a Google search, because why should it?
Yeah,
So,
that
I'm
they
sorry.
also, well, as you say, they also found there's an odd de-indexing as well. Sometimes it's no indirect directives, but also it'll index it finally, and then it decides it doesn't really like it, and then it de-indexes it. Yeah, but if you're one of those people that have been saying like Google's not indexing my content, according to this study, that it has increased like 21%. And 78% of those sites do remain firmly indexed, and it can take, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, up to 6 months to get indexed. According, yeah, Google indexes most pages within 6 months, 93.2%. And they're using a tool called Indexer with no E in the end, that Google puts out to see when pages get indexed.
When we say pages getting indexed, think about the composition of a website. So many files and documents are there to support the function of the website or to support different functions within the website. For instance, there's a number of pages that make up your shopping cart. Those should probably not get indexed, but if Google can, it's going to go in and it's going to look at them, and it will try to put them in its index before deciding that they really don't need to be here. As an example, in fact, in many in many types of sites, over two-thirds of the URLs that the website will generate are not actually indexable documents.
Yes, that's true. And also on when we get to the de-indexing of documents, I just to backtrack a little because I forgot to mention this. They have data that on all of this, and of the ones that do get indexed, the ones that do get de-indexed, 1.97% get de-indexed within 7 days, 7.97% de-indexed within 30, 13.70 de-indexed within 90, and 21.29 de-indexed after 90. So basically, your the indexing times can be 3 months or longer. So if your page has been up and then it's de-indexed, Google's found something it doesn't like, the place to go look for that is in GSC. It will tell you why a page, it'll say like page crawled not indexed, or page not discovered not indexed. Discovered not indexed has technical issues. Crawled not indexed, you have to do a little more deep diving on that.
Often a content issue, or Google can't read your content because it's got too much JavaScript goop to go through, and it's got so much JavaScript goop to go through on so many similar pages, it thinks it's duplicate content.
It does. Oh, one more thing.
That's the dumbest one of all, by the way.
No, the dumbest one is a new thing I'm seeing on sites. Font too small. I've seen that on three sites I've audited in the last 2 months.
Is that a mobile problem?
No,
That's a mobile problem. It's got to be a mobile problem. What do you mean font too small?
no, but that's where it's checked, right? Because it's mobile first. But yeah, so font can be too small for Google and they will not read it. So it has to be below, I hate using points because you don't use points anywhere, you use EAMs and percentages for responsiveness. But they say below 10 pixels, 10 points, then they might not read that content. So check. And I had several sites like had these tiny little sections. I could read it on the screen, but it was very small. It was like
In
basically.
reports that I generate, I tend to use 8-point font in charts because it's just so much data you want to express and you're confined to what's effectively an 8.5 by 11 page. You need to use 8-point font just to get that chart all in there looking good.
Well, you know
Brr.
what you're doing
Well, this is an
damage of it.
example of good looking content Google just won't deal with. Huh.
Exactly, because like this too tiny, I can't tell what that is, so I'm just gonna move on. So it's been around for a long time. But I just funny that I had three sites in 2 months that had that issue.
Well, you know, Google is getting older.
Yeah, but it was the sites, not Google.
Okay. Google on Search Console, no index detected errors.
Yeah, so this seems to be a Cloudflare situation. They're not 100% sure what's causing it, but they believe they've worked it down to Cloudflare. And basically, someone's like, Google Search Console index says that there's a no index detected. And the person's like, I checked everywhere. And I had this happen actually on
They checked
something
in the head
recently.
section.
They checked the head, they checked the, if they have the, I can't think of the file right now because I'm tired.
The
The
robot
one
text
it's on
files.
Apache and Apache 2
Oh,
can de-index something.
The C
So
access.
yeah, so they do believe that it's happening on Cloudflare, which may in effect interfere with indexing. They've had problems with Cloudflare in the past. So if your pages aren't getting indexed, you also may want to check and make sure Cloudflare is not a problem. Google's actually worked directly with Cloudflare, is actually Gary who did to kind of solve their issues. So if you're having a problem with something being listed as no index, it's generally not really an issue. If you go to the search and you just put the URL in quotes, it should come up. But if it doesn't, you might want to go ahead and check with Cloudflare and ask them what you need to do.
Okay.
So now we're going to
Okay.
some fast ones. You don't have. You can just comment on these, Jim, because I know ad stories are not generally our wheelhouse, but these are quick ones. So Google Ads, there's a lot of Google Ads stories this week. If you are a Google Ads person, I would go to Barry Schwartz's page on LinkedIn and just look at all the stories for the last 6 days. But these are a few key ones that I think everyone should know about. Google Ads is increasing negative keywords for PMax campaigns to 10,000. And I remember when this came out, I don't know if you know, Jim, if you saw people complaining, but they could only use 100 negative keywords, you know, words you don't want them to rank you for. And like 100 is not a lot on big campaigns, right? Especially if you're a big brand. And they're really stressed out because they could not delist them. So they're getting charged for searches that were irrelevant to them, sometimes getting their money back, sometimes not. But now they've raised it to 10,000. So I'm pretty sure you should be able to get your negative keywords in there when you have 10,000 of them. Any comments?
Excellent. That's good on them.
Yeah. Next is Google Ads review processes use AI and human evaluation for process violations. I don't think this is new, but just I think they're just reminding people, and they wrote an article about it where they give you the full details and a policy document in Google. And they added a section about how does Google Ads detect policy violations. Most people know, though, with the as this is a Barry Schwartz article from SEO Roundtable. Google removed last year 5.5 billion ads, suspended 12.7 million advertiser accounts, restricted 6.9 billion ads, and restricted ads from showing up on 2.1 billion publisher pages. So I think people pretty much assumed there was, you know, some machine
AI
learning going on
involved,
there.
certainly.
I don't think it's new, but it is a new section on the policy document. Google Ads now suggests experiments when dismissing recommendations. So if Google gives you recommendations for your ads, a box will ask you now if you want to dismiss it, but you can also create an experiment. And it's
Buddy, you
going
want
to
to
get,
try it?
yeah, you want to try
Try
it
it.
again?
No,
Want to try
try it. Do it. I
it?
double dare you.
Exactly. And it says, tell us why to help us personalize your recommendations. It's like, I will do it later. I do not think this will improve my performance. This isn't relevant for my business. Tell us why. So it's a new pop-up box you'll get, and it's—I don't know how helpful it is, but you know, good for people to know. And that is all on the ad section today. Now we're going to fast stories, Jim. 60 seconds or less. 60 seconds or less. Google AI mode. Guess what's coming to it, Jim? I bet you can't. I bet you can't guess. I bet you can actually on the first try.
They're going to cross the ad barrier.
They are. Yes, Adweek wrote a story about it. Search Engine Roundtable, Barry reported on it. Google will explore bringing ads into its new AI mode. The company told Adweek AI mode rolled out in beta Wednesday. It can conduct multiple searches at once, serve up in-depth multiple step responses to complex user queries. While ads aren't available in AI mode, Google will leverage learnings from ad products built into AI overviews. The simpler AI-generated responses that Google Search sometimes surfaces atop result pages. Inform its approach to advertising within AI mode. So basically, right now it's training on what you're doing to figure out where they can stick the ads. And
I think
also,
you might they might want to expand those 10,000 negative keywords to maybe 25 to 100,000.
yeah, remember these are large language models, and as we know from what we just read from Columbia, Gemini, which powers AI mode, is wrong a lot and also creates fake links. So
Well,
be
it may
careful.
make some very real connections, and this may cost advertisers some very real money in the long run.
Yes, this is true. I just like to remind people, but you can use it for fun stuff, just not use it for serious things.
This next one I love. Like, what? Okay, go for it.
Oh, I got off the grid. Sorry.
Oh, the
Oh,
Martin warning people
yes.
about
So every
404s.
now and then, because the industry, adds a lot of new people, there are stories that come out that people have to be told who are new. If you're older, you know this one. Martin Split from Google warns against redirecting 404s to the homepage. That's been advice for a long time. Although this time he does explain why. I don't know if he's explained why before. But so when you're doing like a migration, or you're moving a page, or you're taking down a page, and it's going to be a 404, you want to redirect it to a same page, a similar page, or a folder in the structure that relates to that page. Otherwise, Google,
Unless
unless what would,
the product is dead. If the thing is dead, the
yeah,
idea
that's
is
true.
dead, the page is dead, let it die.
Oh, not always though, because you have to check, does it have links? It has links coming into it. Like you wrote an article and it has like a million links coming into it. You don't want to cut that page because then you
Oh
lose
no,
that
again, that's
link.
different. That's an article.
Yeah.
That's something that lives in perpetuity, but say it's
Well,
a product
that's
and
true.
it's an important product page, something you sold a million of, but the product's been discontinued. Even though you might be getting a lot of search traffic for this product, it's been discontinued.
But
You
always
can
search
404 to its nearest iteration,
neighbor.
the next iteration of the product. If there is none, let it die. Because that's what it's not there anymore.
It's true, but always look for a potential redirect, just because there's all sorts of reasons why.
Don't just default to the homepage. That's snake eating its own tail stuff.
Yeah, so basically what happens is, and like I said, I don't think they've explained this before. So Martin Split said, for a crawler, they go like homepage. They go like homepage. Okay, there's something missing there. Basically, they go to the homepage and click through, or basically crawl through your website, finding content, and eventually they might run into a URL that doesn't exist. But if you redirect, then they kind of like being redirected, and then it starts over again. But if you redirect to the homepage, then it doesn't really know what to do with that because that's not relevant, and it becomes a loop kind of situation. So you don't want to create a loop, especially if you create a loop, Google's bot, your crawlers will often leave. They call it a spider trap. So yeah, nothing new, but nice explanation onto why. Then there's hot links. I hadn't heard about hot links in a long time, but they are prevalent and they're on a lot of sites. So if you do a hot link protection, the person was asking John if it would affect their SEO visibility, because basically you're kind of hiding that the link exists. And John said it's fine. That's something from like 2010, and it's not really an issue. So you can hot link protect your URLs. Do not hot link to somebody else's website though and steal their stuff. That is not cool. Google Merchant Center adds. Oh, sorry, Jim. Did you want to add something to that?
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay. Google Merchant Center adds bulk request reviews. This is kind of a nice new feature. So basically, depending on the Google Merchant Center warning or error, you can now dispute or request a review in bulk. It's not applicable to all issues, just a few at the moment. But it is nice that now if you have issues, you don't have to do them one at a time. You can do some of them all at the same time to get the review. Anything to say, Jim?
Good. No, I mean, good, except this is like the verification. It sort of remind me of the verification process in Search Console. Since that's exactly what's going to happen. It's going to reject all of your changes, and it just won't tell you why. No, I think this is a good thing. It's an excellent thing. Let people solve their problems in bulk instead of having to go page by page by page by page. Because I remember telling clients I have to go page by page by page by page, and them just like looking at me like, oh. So
Yeah,
this is
that's
good.
like that's fun. Moving on to the next one, Google Search paperclip icon for search results. Up at the top of the right corner where you sign in to Google, there's now going to be next to the settings gear, there's going to be a copy link to the clipboard for anything that's in Google products page. So
And
that you
that that's
could.
gonna that copying is gonna look like a paperclip.
Yes.
Oh my
Like
God!
they.
So like Clippy grew up and got a real job with
Yeah.
Google.
That's like all the modern icons. It just looks like an oval with a line in it.
Well, I mean, he hates it. He can't express himself anymore like he could when he was a teenager.
I tell you, I do think Microsoft really missed out with Copilot. If you brought Clippy back, there's two generations that have been right on that. next, Google Shopping results is going to add a price is the same at checkout. So apparently, sometimes people try to change the price at checkout and show a different one in the, where you go to
Oh
purchase.
no way, really? They pull a
Really?
50 on you like that?
They have, and it's
Oh,
actually.
who would do something awful like that
I can't imagine, but now it
in
says
this world? Oh my goodness.
now it says that the price at checkout is the price that you're seeing on search. So I think
Or
that's fine.
someone's getting suspended.
Yes, you can't get
Good.
suspended for doing the falsification. Yes.
Good.
Now here's our last story and my favorite story of the day because it does have an SEO lesson in it. And if you get a chance, go to Search Engine Roundtable and look up the nearest food store photo story. So someone named their store the nearest food store.
Smart
And
idea for that
we
for the next month.
well, we see this all the time. People do near me, near, those kind of things. But Google doesn't use the word near when it comes to locations, like local locations. They use things like how far are you currently from that store? They can tell by your phone, right? There are things like that that they use to determine near. They don't use the word. So a lot of companies were told like to change part of their name to near something or nearest. This one is the nearest food store. But it doesn't
Just
help you in search. It's just, it is fun though. This guy guys got a whole lot of publicity for saying nearest food search,
so
a
it
food
did work,
store. Yeah,
just not the way you thought it would.
exactly. Yeah. So yeah, Google doesn't use the words near me in local search. It uses like relevance and location and all sorts of other factors. So anyway, I thought that was a fun way to end the day on though. So
So if you want to succeed in Google search, name your store relevant location near me.
and then
There
you
you
actually have to
go.
be near the person when they're looking it
Yeah.
up. Yeah.
If you want to do well in Google search, if you're a small business and you're trying to do well in local, give them a heck of a lot of information about you, as much as you possibly can, and get reviews. And just go
And review.
nuts on your Google business profile and just fill all the boxes. Do it.
Reviews are
Like,
extremely
seriously, they give
important.
you these boxes to fill in. Fill them in.
Yes, and get some really good information about filling out like your Google My Business from people who write about local search because it can be a little tricky and you want like a guide right there with you while you do it. Also, Google has documentation on that.
Right, Google,
So that's
publish
it,
your home
Tim.
phone number. What the heck?
So we made it through the grid.
We absolutely did. And we might
Yeah.
have gone over time. Sorry, studio. But it was a fun, fast-paced, huge information show.
It was. Well, it's hard now to determine like what stories to do. There's so many.
Indeed.
Oh,
Well,
yeah. So hopefully I think we got a good grid today though. So and now we're going into the weekend. One more day.
one more day
One more
into the
day.
weekend. It's not a
Yes.
long weekend, is it?
No, it's
Oh,
right
damn.
weekend.
Well, there was still hoping. Okay, but we have gone around the full grid. So, on behalf of Christian Chakin's Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. And you've been listening to Webcology on WMR.FM, recorded live to podcast at on the 13th of March, 2025. Friends, this is a really challenging time. People are like hair trigger. Try to be kind to each other. Try to be empathetic. Even those of you people who think empathy is the fall of Western civilization, try it anyway. You'll have a way better day. Be kind, be nice, rank well, be well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.